Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 37, The Killing of Keshin Vyoma. We have about 14 verses today with no purports, starting with text 10. Okay, let's just do text 10 together. Let's do the first verse here. Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatman.
Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatman.
Yogesha, Jagadishvara.
Yogesha, Jagadishvara.
Vasudeva, Kilavasa.
Vasudeva, Kilavasa.
Satvatam, Pravara, Prabho. Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatman.
Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatman.
Yogesha, Jagadishvara.
Yogesha, Jagadishvara.
Vasudeva, Kilavasa.
Vasudeva, Kilavasa.
Satvatam, Pravara, Prabho.
Satvatam, Pravara, Prabho.
Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatman.
Krishna,
Yogesha Jagadishvara.
Yogesha Jagadishvara.
Vasudeva Kilavasa.
Vasudeva Kilavasa.
Satvatam Pravara Prabho.
Satvatam Pravara Prabho.
Others? Ladies. Students. Text 10, I'll read 11, and then we'll do the word for word. Tvamatma sarvabhutanam eko jyotir ivaidhasam gudho gudha shaya shakshi maha purusha ishvara. So, word for word. Krishna, Krishna.
Krishna.
Oh, Krishna, Krishna.
Krishna.
Aprameya atman.
Aprameya.
Oh, immeasurable one.
Yoga Isha.
Yoga Isha. Oh, source of all mystic power. Jagadishvara.
Jagadishvara,
O Lord of the universe,
O Lord of the universe.
Vasudeva.
Vasudeva,
O Son of Vasudeva, Akila Avasa, O Shelter of All Beings,
Satvatam,
of the Yadu dynasty.
Pravara.
O you who are the best. Prabho.
O Master.
Tvam.
You.
Atma.
The Supreme
Soul.
Sarva.
Of all.
Bhutanam.
Created beings.
Eka.
Alone.
Jyoti.
Fire.
Iva.
Like.
Aidhasam.
Enkindling
wood.
Gudha.
Hidden.
Guha.
Within the cave of the heart.
Shaya.
Sitting.
Sakshi.
The witness.
Mahapurusha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Ishvara.
The Supreme Controller.
Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni said, O Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of the universe. O Vasudev, shelter of all beings and best of the Yadus. O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart, like the fire dormant within kindling wood. You are the witness within everyone, the supreme personality and the ultimate controlling deity. Okay, I think I'll just read the English of the next few verses. You are the shelter of all souls, and being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will. By your personal creative potency, you manifested in the beginning the primal modes of material nature, and through their agency, you create, maintain, and then destroy this universe. You, that very same creator, have now descended on the earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramata, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings, and also to protect the godly. The horse demon was so terrifying that his neighing frightened the demigods into leaving their heavenly kingdom, but by our good fortune, you've enjoyed the sport of killing him. In just 2 days, O mighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura, Mushtika, and other wrestlers, along with those of the elephant Kuvalyapita and King Kamsa, all by your hand. Then I will see you kill Kalyavana, Mura, Naraka, and the conch demon, and I will also see you steal the Parijata flower and defeat Indra. I will then see you marry many daughters of heroic kings and after paying them with your valor. Then, O Lord of the universe, in Dwarka, you will deliver King Nriga from a curse and take for yourself the Shamataka jewel together with another wife. You will bring back a Brahmin's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj, and thereafter you will kill Poundrika, burn down the city of Kashi, and annihilate Dantavakra and the king of Chedi during the great Rajasuya sacrifice. I shall see all these heroic pastimes, along with many others, you will perform during your residence in Dwarka. These pastimes are glorified on this earth in the songs of transcendental poets. The text 21. Subsequently, I will see you appear as time personified, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver and destroying the entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. Let us approach you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, you have already achieved all possible desirable things. And by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. I bow down to you, the Supreme Controller, who are dependent only on yourself. By your potency, you have constructed the unlimited particular arrangements of this universe. Now you have appeared as the greatest hero among the Yadus, Rishnis, and Satvatas, and have chosen to participate in human warfare. Ready 24, too. Shukadev Goswami said, having thus addressed Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, Narada bowed down and offered him obeisances. Then that great sage and most eminent devotee took his leave from the Lord and went away, feeling great joy at having directly seen him. Om Gyanakam Randasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Limitani Naitasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Vanchakopa Kudrupishtha Kripasinabhyabhacha Paditana Pavani Vyo Vaishyavidu Namo Namaha. So this is kind of an interesting group of 14 or 15 verses here that is more or less inserted into the pastimes between the killing of the Keshi demon and the killing of Vyomasura. So, rather interesting that we have this insertion here within the story where Narada Muni is foretelling future pastimes of Krishna. If you notice the structure of Narada Muni's statements here, he first begins with two verses that simply glorify Krishna, primarily as the supreme soul of the universe. Then there's about six verses where he actually states his business, which is the previewing of the future pastimes in Mathura and Dwarka. And then he concludes again with more prayers glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the way a devotee approaches the Lord. Upon seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you wouldn't probably just get down to your business, you know, as far as, okay, I want to find out this and this and that. No, you would first be, very much appreciative of even having the ability to have the darshan of the Lord. And therefore, we see that whenever anybody has that opportunity, when devotees are able to see Krishna face to face or any of his expansions, they first glorify him. They first give often these general prayers. Then they kind of talk about whatever their particular business with the Lord is at the time and conclude also with glorification. Just like when we first see Krishna every day, just as Narada Muni is seeing Krishna, we also have the opportunity to see Krishna when the curtains open and we have the darshan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do? We sing the Govindam prayers, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. In other words, they are prayers of glorification, of the wonderful qualities, the beauty, everything about Krishna. So that's the nature of the devotee's relationship with Krishna. It's always about glorification of him and understanding his greatness. So after doing that, then Narada previews these future pastimes, because he knows the Vrindavan pastimes are coming to an end and he's about to embark on new adventures. So the next chapter, chapter 38, is the chapter when Akura comes to Vrindavan. Okay, so students, wake up. I know you're waking up. You're all taking your notes and everything. But what does this mean when Akura comes to Vrindavan? What does this signify? What change is going to happen when Akura comes? You remember? Yes. Absolutely, that's correct. He's going to take Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. And then after Mathura, does Krishna and Balaram, then do they come back to Vrindavan? What? No, absolutely. So Krishna and Balaram, particularly Balaram returns, but Krishna will leave Vrindavan at this point and not return. So this is a very significant transition between the Vrindavan Leela and the Mathura and the Dwarka Leela. So Narada Muni is noting that by sort of interjecting at this point. And then he's giving a preview. He's basically spoken the whole rest of the next 50 chapters of the Bhagavatam. He's put in these very concise few verses, sort of a preview of coming attractions in Mathura and Vrindavan. So since Narada Muni comes in here and then he leaves again and we don't see him for a while, I thought I would check your knowledge on Narada Muni. You ready? Okay, where does Narada Muni live? This is for the students. Where does Narada Muni live? It's kind of a trick question. Anybody else? Okay, go ahead.
In the middle of the universe?
Yeah, he does. Why is that? Does he have a home? What? Haridas? What? Why does he have to always travel? Go ahead. Someone up here? Okay, in the back here. I can't hear.
Because he doesn't have a home,
but why not? Why doesn't he have a home? Why does he have to travel throughout the universe? Go ahead. What was that? To preach the holy name. Yeah, that's the advantage that he took. Because he didn't have a home, he took this as an opportunity to preach throughout the universe. That's absolutely right. But anybody remember what happened? Why he had to always travel? He was cursed by Daksha. Anyway. So he was cursed by Daksha that he had to travel, but Narada Muni didn't see this as a curse. Daksha, being a householder, thought that'd be a great curse not to have, not to be able to stay at home. But Narada Muni said, great, now I can preach, as somebody said, he can preach throughout the universe. No fixed resident. Okay, here's an easy one. What instrument does he play? Go ahead.
Say it. Divina. Okay. Now, what in his past lifetime, before he sort of took this position as the transcendental spaceman of Narada Muni, what was his position in his last lifetime? Boy, he's got them all. Kandarva. I don't. Yeah, that was back a little, wasn't it? Yeah. Who was this? Is the one right before? Go ahead. He was a little boy, yeah. And what was his family? What kind of family did he have? Go ahead.
Poor.
What?
She said poor.
Poor, yeah. He was poor. Specifically, his mother was a... Anybody remember? Go ahead.
Servant.
She was a servant, yes. She was a maidservant. But even though she was a maidservant, which isn't a very high position, she had the great fortune, and Narada Muni had the great fortune, because she was able to serve who? Go ahead. Krishna? Well, indirectly, yeah. But who specifically was she serving? Go ahead.
Sages.
The great sages. They were also called the Bhaktivedantas. These great sages came and visited and stayed at a house or an inn. I think it was an inn, that his mother was serving in. And then he was able to hear the great sages speaking. So he got that opportunity of getting transcendental knowledge from these great sages. Okay. Then what unfortunate thing happened? At least materially unfortunate. What happened in his life when he was 5 years old? Yeah. His mother died. Now, that would be a very unfortunate thing. We can just imagine how sad that would be. But what did Narada Muni do, being a great soul? How did he take that unfortunate situation to an advantage? Where did he go? Remember?
In the forest.
He went to the forest. And what did he do there? What? Did what?
Austerity.
Did austerity. You really got your Narada Muni story down. All right. Did austerities, and he did what? Meditated, and finally what happened? What did he achieve through his austerities? Okay, take it.
Krishna?
He saw Krishna. I think it was actually Narayan for him. But yes, he got the darshan of the Lord through his austerities. Now, and of course, at that time, the Lord said, you only see me this one time, this lifetime. But then he took birth again at the end of that lifetime. He took birth as Narada Muni, as we know Narada Muni. So, and then he became, of course, one of the greatest devotees. He travels throughout the universe, and he's always popping up in Krishna's pastimes, isn't he? You know, whenever, particularly things are slowing down a little bit, you know, he comes in and, you know, like he tells, like Kamsa's ready to, like, repent and, you know, let them off and everything and say, you know, and not killing the children. Narada Muni says, well, you know, you better be careful a bit. You know, you never know about it. So in other words, Narada Muni is kind of always keeping things moving to be able to help fulfill Krishna's pastimes. He has that very nice service. Now here's a bonus question. This is a tough one. I bet a lot of the adults can't get this one. What color is Narada Muni's hair? You know that? What? How'd you know that?
Last week they told us in class.
Oh, I missed it. Okay. All right. And for those who want the reference, it's Bhagavatam 10:70-32, where it says that he has a mass of golden locks. All right, that was an easy one. You already heard that one. Okay. Okay, returning to our our story in the Bhagavatam here. Narada Muni has the capability of seeing in the future. This is one of his attributes, one of his particular glories. And because he can see past, present, and future, he was able to look forward to these future pastimes of Krishna, knowing what Krishna was going to do in the future. And as I was reading this, it's not really explained why this is sort of inserted. Why do we have Narada Muni right here at the end telling these future pastimes? It's not completely clear. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada says he wants to impress upon us that Krishna is fully independent through his prayers. That's one, you know, in other words, he can do whatever he wants. You know, he has these wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan, but yet he can, you know, even though this is his most, you know, beloved devotees, his most beloved place, because he's independent, he can then, you know, move on to other pastimes. And in Vishnachakravarti Thakura's purports, he also mentions that Krishna's nature is to always play. But here, like one of these verses at the end said, now he's going to be engaged in warfare, which is kind of against his sort of nature. in a sense that he enjoys and relishes his Vrindavan pastimes, but because he's completely independent, he can now engage in these other activities. And I think Maitreya Prabhu pointed out yesterday that he performs these, you know, goes off and kills, you know, demons like that in his Vasudeva form. So his original, you know, sweet, beautiful form of Krishna remains in Vrindavan. But he does go and performs these other pastimes. And of course, the pastimes of Mathura and Dwarka are also eternal pastimes, and they're also in the spiritual world. There's an area of Mathura, an area of Dwarka, just as there's an area of Vrindavan in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. So in Narada's prayers, especially in the beginning, he emphasizes this idea that Krishna is the super soul of the world and the super soul within everyone's heart. So this seemed like an important point that was being made. And I was going to read, because we don't have any purports here, this is a little bit from a purports to verses 11 and 12 from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. This is just part of it. It says, Narada answered, "You are the super soul within me, who gave me the inspiration to request you, so what can I do? You dwell not only in my heart, but within the hearts of all living entities. You remain hidden just like a fire within wood." You remember that analogy that's given in the verse. It just says fire is sort of latent within wood. You don't see any fire if you had a piece of wood, but you know, you light, you know, it gets heated and the fire comes out. So the fire is in there, hidden within the wood. In the same way, the super soul, which most of us cannot see within the heart, is there, ready to come out at the proper time. "You are the witness of everything. Thus you are the greatest person with the power to do anything. Generally, even great persons have someone above them with more power. But you are alone the supreme controller, Ishvara, of everyone." And then he says, "If you had not created myself, my intelligence, and the rest of the universe, then I would not be able to make any request from you." With this intention, Narada speaks. So Narada is confirming, not only is Krishna the supreme personality of Godhead, that he is the source of everything within the universe. He is the life of the universe. He is the super soul that injects life into this material world. Otherwise, we would be in a position of dull matter, of basically unconscious material elements. But because of Krishna, the super soul injects that life within and makes everything animate. And of course, also, not only does Krishna expand himself as super soul, but he expands as the jivas, the jiva tattva, which also is pervading throughout the universe and giving life to everything. So in this way, Krishna as the super soul is acting. It's also mentioned specifically that as the super soul, Krishna is expanding within each living entity and is giving that power of knowledge. So we know that the super soul, in the role of Paramatma, is the knowledge aspect or the chit potency of the Lord. So that chit potency or knowledge is actually there within Paramatma. We know that there are the three forms of Krishna, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The eternity aspect is the Brahman aspect. The knowledge aspect, the chit potency, is Paramatma. And of course, eternity is also contained within that because each is more complete. So the chit potency contains both eternity and knowledge. Then, of course, the Bhagavan aspect is eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Is the personification of Krishna, the person who has intimate relationship with the living entity. So we often focus, of course, upon the Bhagavan aspect, but not so much upon the Paramatma. But the Paramatma is extremely important and is really the aspect of Krishna that we are most closely in contact with because he is within the heart of every living entity. Krishna is right there with us at all times, in all places, throughout all lifetimes, throughout all life forms, as the Paramatma within the heart. So the super soul of the Paramatma is guiding every living entity. Every living entity, even the animals and the plants, they're being guided in what to do by super soul. Sometimes the scientists often call this instinct, but Prabhupada said instinct is actually a combination of learned behavior and the super soul. You know, very succinct definition, you know, of what this is. So in other words, the why animals are doing what they're doing, even without, you know, why do the birds fly south in the winter? It's because of the super soul is guiding them. But the super soul is even more specifically guiding the devotees and giving knowledge of, Krishna's giving knowledge of himself, of the process of devotional service and knowledge of who we really are throughout the heart. So, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ishvara sarva-bhutanam, yudhishthira arjuna tishtati, brahmayam sarva-bhutani, yancha rudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated on as on a machine made of the material energy. And, of course, for the devotee, Krishna is specifically giving knowledge as the super soul within the heart. Bhagavad Gita 10.10, here says, Adami Buddha Yogam Tam, I give that intelligence by which they can come to me. There's a very interesting verse and purport in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, verse 36, where Krishna says, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So, the intelligence and the super soul are very closely connected. We're talking about receiving spiritual knowledge. Well, how do we actually perceive that knowledge, or how do we experience that knowledge? You know, we have to perceive it in some way while we're in these material bodies, and that is through the intelligence. And Prabhupada explained how the intelligence is right next door to this, to the soul. And the purified intelligence of the devotee is able to understand spiritual knowledge and understand the presence of Krishna. In fact, in this verse, a very, very nice long purport, I'll just read a little bit about it, but Krishna explains how the intelligence is the form direction of super soul. So that's a very interesting phrase, and we've all heard that, that Srila Prabhupada has given to explain this connection between the intelligence and how it is coming from the super soul. Prabhupada says, actually the Lord is not perceivable by our present materialized senses, but one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by practical service attitude, there is a revelation of the Lord's mercy, and such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. He can perceive that intelligence as is the form direction of the Paramatma and plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. Then Prabhupada has a long, about a page of purport here, where he explains how the intelligence can distinguish between spirit and matter. And he gives a long explanation how even if one is not, you know, in pure spiritual knowledge, through the intelligence one can actually understand spirit and matter and the distinction. Then Prabhupada continues, intelligence gives one direction like some higher authority, and the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man, and so a living being is dependent on the intelligence or direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence, and this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, it's just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority who is present and residing within every individual living being is the super self. So when Krishna says he's guiding the wanderings of all living entities, we can understand that for a devotee, he's directly guiding the devotee through the heart as the super soul. Of course, when one is completely purified, one is directed, you know, directly by Krishna. Krishna even skips the super soul and can directly guide his pure devotees. But in the meantime, before that point of pure devotional service, we can take direction of the super soul. And how do we understand that direction of the super soul? Through the intelligence. Now, of course, it's not like intelligence is always, you know, completely pure and spiritual. Bhagavad Gita explains that there's intelligence in the three modes of nature. There's tamasa buddhi and, you know, rajasa buddhi, like that. So the intelligence can be contaminated, and for most materialists, their intelligence gives them that discriminating power about how to get sense gratification, basically. In other words, the mind is the repository of the sensory information. Sensory perception, you know, and perception comes to the mind, and then the mind basically, is choosing, accepting, rejecting. This is the process of the mind. But the intelligence is above that. The intelligence has finer discrimination and is able to evaluate. Is able to evaluate, this is actually not good for me, or this would be good for me. This is the instruction of the scriptures, the instructions of the guru. I should choose to do that rather than the dictation of the mind. So the intelligence has this very key and pivotal point in our spiritual life. In other words, it is through the intelligence that we're able to control the mind and actually make proper spiritual decisions and able to advance in spiritual life. And so for the purified intelligence or in higher modes of nature, then that intelligence becomes the form direction of Paramatma. We can understand Krishna's desires, Krishna's meaning, and his will for us through the intelligence. Now, of course, we have to be very careful of distinguishing between the mind and intelligence. And as we were saying, the mind has its dictations, and if a person is not advanced in spiritual life, then the intelligence simply obeys the dictations of the mind. Mind says, I want this, and intelligence figures out how to get it. I mean, that's pretty much what happens in material life. The devotee, of course, has a much higher capability of utilization of the intelligence. To understand the difference here, also, we can think of it this way. The mind is binary. The mind is accepting and rejecting. The mind can only hold one idea at a time. It's not capable of actually simultaneously holding contradictory pieces of information or contradictory evidence, where the intelligence is. The intelligence can actually hold two contradictory pieces of information at the same time, and it can have this greater perspective. Like all the time, you know, in Bhagavatam class, we always get these questions, well, if it says this, then what about this? Like yesterday, a very, very good question came up, and Trivikram asked it, well, if Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, why is it the gopis are lamenting when he leaves Vrindavan? In other words, two contradictory pieces of information we have, and the mind actually cannot answer that. But the intelligence can begin to understand, because the intelligence has that capacity. You know, just like we have in our the whole basis of our philosophy is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which means simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference. Now, the word achinta is there, inconceivable. It's inconceivable to the material mind. Spiritual life cannot be understood, cannot be realized through mental process. But through purified intelligence, one is able to have at least some concept of it. You know, otherwise, how would we understand Krishna consciousness? How can we accept Krishna consciousness? Even if we're not fully realized, we do at least have enough intelligence to be able to understand the principles to a certain degree. We're able to understand the words of the spiritual master, of the scriptures, of Krishna, in order to say, oh yes, this makes some sense. Yes, I accept this. This is logical. This seems to be proven by my experience. Our intelligence is able to do that. Now, that doesn't substitute for the purifying process of bhakti yoga and the actual spiritual nature of realizing Krishna consciousness, but that will come, you know, if our intelligence is rightly situated. So, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Krishna and the living entity are one and different. Krishna is greater than the greatest. He's smaller than the smallest. Krishna is all-pervading. Krishna is everywhere, but yet he's very localized as the Supersoul within everyone's heart. He's within, Prabhupada said, within every atom and between every atom. How can Krishna be within an atom and be pervading the entire universe at the same time? Well, we could say, well, you know, but the mind actually can't grasp that because these are conflicting or contradictory pieces of information. You know, that is why, you know, we're always talking about getting off the mental platform or transcending the mind, because the mind is not able to understand spiritual knowledge. It really isn't. The intelligence can begin to understand. You know, so it is through the intelligence that we can understand these concepts of Krishna consciousness, and we can begin to understand the practice of Krishna consciousness. Now, the Paramatma, first of all, gives us intelligence and guides us in the right way. But the Paramatma also helps us to purify the heart. The Paramatma is able to purify the intelligence and purify the heart so that we can advance in Krishna consciousness. Of course, in 1.2.17, Krishna says, Srinvatas Vakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana Kridyantasto Hyabhadrani Vidunoti Surhitsatam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul in everyone's heart, as the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So we understand that for the sincere devotee, that Krishna gives us the intelligence first to understand spiritual life, to come to Krishna, to understand our real position and how we can distinguish between matter and spirit and understand that there is life beyond this material creation and material desires and material senses. Then he also helps us to purify everything. This purify the senses, purify the mind, purify the intelligence by guiding us through the process of sadhana, through the process of acceptance of the spiritual master, through the whole process of bhakti yoga. So, super soul is always guiding the living entity. Just as we see that, the saying is that by the mercy of Krishna, one receives the Guru, by the mercy of Guru, one receives Krishna, or the other way around. And so, in other words, how does by the mercy of Krishna one receive a Guru? Well, obviously, Krishna is guiding the living entity through the heart, through the super soul, to that point of coming in contact with the spiritual master, coming in contact with the scriptures, so that one can then understand who is Krishna, accept Krishna, and become Krishna's devotees. So anyway, it's very, very important process of purification. It's important to understand how the super soul is guiding the living entity, how he's purifying the intelligence so that we can come to Krishna consciousness. And that is why in the beginning of these verses, Narada Muni is so much glorifying Krishna as the super soul. See, he's not only the super soul within every living entity, but the super soul of the whole universe, who is guiding and behind everything. So in this way, we can understand the greatness of Krishna and understand Krishna not just in an abstract way, but understand how Krishna is personally working within every one of us and how we have a personal relationship with Krishna that helps us to come to Krishna and to understand Krishna. Now, so, again, we have these very, very nice verses from Narada Muni, who gives us a little preview of the future and helps us to understand the very wonderful position of Krishna. Okay, so I'll end at that point. Are there any comments, questions, Prabhu?
You mentioned that the Paramatma has chit potency and its eternity.
Yeah.
I've heard that the devotee sees Krishna inside. Primanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanin, Santaha Sadaiva Radeshu Vilokayanti, Yam Sham Sundaram. So he sees Sham Sundar inside. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's explained, Ya Antaha Sukha, Antara Ramas, Tathantar Jyoti Revayaha. One who seeks Sukha, happiness inside. So then is it that in the devotee's heart, the Paramatma is replaced by Krishna because he's getting happiness from the inside? So where is the happiness coming from otherwise?
Where does the happiness come from?
Yeah, so the Ananda, Bhagavan is complete with Ananda.
Yeah.
But the Paramatma, as you said, doesn't have that feature potency. Yeah. So then my mind is confused.
No, it's a good point because if one were purely Paramatma realized, such as a yogi performing meditation, he would not necessarily experience that happiness and bliss, which is part and product of devotional service. In other words, that really is the Ananda potency, is part of the process of bhakti, and therefore part of the process of Bhagavan realization. So, at least my understanding is that it's not that we have no Bhagavan realization. We have a little bit, We're beginning to understand Krishna, we're beginning to experience Krishna, and therefore we do experience that happiness or bliss or Ananda, which is there in the process of bhakti. Because even in the very beginning of bhakti, one can begin to experience this. And that's described in Nectar Devotion and other places, that even the beginning practice of bhakti gives one this happiness. And that beginning process, is described that is greater than any of the happiness found in Brahman realization or other processes. So while we can't claim to be Bhagavan realized, our understanding, we're not seeing Krishna before us as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are beginning to experience Krishna through the process of bhakti, and we are also beginning to experience Krishna through the super soul, guiding us as the Paramatma, and we are also beginning to understand a little about the eternal nature of Krishna and the eternal nature of the soul. So all of these realizations of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are all coming about simultaneously through the devotee, because the bhakti yoga contains all of them. Someone may have a better explanation than that. That was the best I could do at the moment. Pranga Minibhu.
There is a one verse in 7th canto, I forgot, in 7th canto Prabhupada put in the purport of Prahlad Maharaj's explanation by quoting Rupa Goswami Pad. He says, Brahmananda bhavedesha cheta prarardha gunikrita naitam bhakti sukham vade paramanna tullam api. So he explained, in the translation Prabhupada put, the devotional service is 1,000 trillion times more happiness than Brahmananda. Then if we go back to another place, where what is the happiness of Brahmananda? He said, 100 times more than Brahma, Prajapati Brahma's Ananda. What is Brahma's Ananda or happiness? 100 times more than the other Prajapati's Ananda. What is their Ananda? 100 times more than Indra's happiness. What is Indra's happiness? 100 times more than the other demigods. So it goes down all the way down, down, down. So there is Ananda, what he's saying, but as you said very nicely, the Sevananda or serving is 1,000 trillion times, Prabhupada says, more. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's just a number.
So if our bhakti is only advanced a little, we still have a few million times more than happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you for that quote. That's good. Yeah. Madame Mahanbrun?
I had a thought on it and run it by and see what you think. Is that even our Paramatma understanding is not disconnected from Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. And even our Brahman understanding is not disconnected. So the saying is, when the tide comes in, all the boats rise up. Mm-hmm. So I think we have an upgrade, a Bhagavan upgrade on all of our realizations, whatever realization one may have had before becoming a devotee. They've all been simultaneously upgraded by understanding that this Paramatma, we don't see Paramatma separate from Krishna.
Right.
I don't think we can even conceive of it that way as a devotee. It's just an aspect of Krishna acting in this capacity. So,
you know, that's a really good point. You know, in the Lower in the Heart chapter in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, it's described the process of meditation, and you meditate upon the form of Vishnu as 8 inches high or whatever in the heart. But I don't think devotees really do that, do we? I mean, so much. I mean, we might. I mean, you might, you know, conceive of the super soul that way, how it's described in the process of meditation. But generally we don't, because just as Madan Mahaprabhu was saying, we don't really think of any of these aspects of Krishna separately from Krishna. I mean, to us, Krishna is everything. You know, Krishna is the, you know, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything else is contained within him. And just as we were saying that the eternity aspect is automatically contained within Chit, and then the eternity and the knowledge aspect are automatically contained within Ananda. So in other words, as you said, if you have Krishna, you have everything. You know, rising tide lifts all boats. So that the more we understand Krishna and Krishna consciousness, because of the very definition and nature of everything being contained within the concept of Krishna, then we're automatically going to understand all these other things. As you said, we will understand super soul, we'll understand Brahman, we'll understand even the role of the material energy. You know, Krishna says all things both noumenal and phenomenal will be known through this understanding, which means both material and spiritual. So, yeah, there's no lack of understanding, and as you were saying, the depth of our understanding of all aspects of Krishna are going to increase the more and more we simply engage in bhakti aimed at Krishna. Yeah. So, yeah, that bhakti, the knowledge of Krishna and the process of bhakti pervades everything we do. And therefore, that natural happiness that is there within, contained within bhakti, will be in part of all of our activities. Okay. Probably about out of time, real quick, maybe.
Sure. There is one verse also in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Prabhupada, when he asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj on the Bhakti Shastri, they put the first that verse. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what is the realization, conclusion of all realization? And it says, Bhagavan sambandha bhakti avidehaya prema prayajan vedetina vastukaya. Veda means, or any shastra means, these three things should be established. The Bhagavan is the sambandha which include Paramatma, Brahman and everything. So Bhagavan realization in that sense, Prabhupada mentioned. And then he says, bhakti is the only process to obtain. The goal is the Krishna prema. So these three is the conclusion of everything, which includes Paramatma and other. Because Paramatma, I don't have a relationship. No living being has a relationship with Paramatma, but with Bhagavan. So then in the purport Prabhupada put, when the soul surrendered to God, then Paramatma automatically manifests as a Bhagavan.
Hmm.
That was very good.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that does kick in a lot of thoughts, but anyway, yeah, it's a very interesting concept, relationship, as you said. In other words, I guess I wouldn't say we have no relationship with the Paramatma as devotees, but it certainly becomes subsumed within our relationship with Krishna, with Bhagavan, and it's really more secondary, isn't it? And the thing is, it's understood in the context of understanding Krishna as Bhagavan, not as a separate. I guess in that sense, we don't have a separate relationship with Super Soul outside of a relationship with Krishna. Maybe that's the easiest way to say it. Okay, before I get further confused, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.